Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been chilly there. It was rather chilly last night. As a matter of fact, almost got down below freezing, maybe just barely did, because a few snowflakes fell in town. Only a few people felt them, and everybody who heard about it didn't believe them, but it actually happened. The rhubarb is up, and so life is good, and the fishing season has begun. So the door is open now to contemplation for these people of my town who work so hard. They work so hard. These men, they work like draft horses. There are lawn chairs in Lake Wobegon that are rusting, that nobody's ever sat in. They're just purely theoretical. People work so hard. And then fishing season comes along, and men can go out and sit in a boat, and they look at the reflection of the sky in the water, earth and heaven joined in one plane, and this line extending down into the water and little ripples around it. They sit and they look at that, some of them for hours. It's not about fish, it's about wisdom. This line is a conduit for wisdom. It's a beautiful thing. You sit there and you think over the great questions of life. Why do we work so hard? Work so hard. You know, life is short. You realize that when you get to be my age, you work so hard, and then the grim reaper comes and takes a swing at you, and you feel this big whoomp in your chest. And your thought when this happens is not, why didn't I earn more money? Your thought is, why didn't I spend more time sitting and looking at things? And here you are, you're in a boat, you're looking at things, thinking about that. Why do we work so hard to get things that then we find out we don't want or need, and then we have to get rid of them and put them out on our lawn for a yard sale? And that's embarrassing. People look at what we have worked so hard for, this pitiful, pitiful display of ridiculous goods. Why do we work so hard to bring along, coax along these hothouse flowers when there are dandelions that want to grow? Hardy, beautiful dandelions that if you just let them go, they would have a field. You have a field of yellow daffodils like Wordsworth wrote poems about. But no, we work hard to root them out, ignoring the verse in Scripture where it says, consider the dandelions in your yard. They toil not and they spin not. And yet I tell you that Solomon in all his glory was not arrayed like one of these. If God so blessed the flowers that grow in your yard, how much more will he bless you, O ye of little faith? Take no thought for the morrow, for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. One more commandment that we will never follow: take no thought for the morrow. But at least we know where we went off the road, right? So there it is. Now snow fell Friday night, and it was snow. Mary Tollison saw it, and Glenn Nelson saw it, and Pastor Liz saw it, and Marilyn Tollerud saw it. They all saw it. People said, oh, that wasn't snow. That was fluff from cottonwood trees. No, it was not. Fluff does not melt when it lands on you, but people simply would not believe it. Middle of May and snow falling. No, Marilyn Tollerud saw it. She walked into the bedroom and she saw her husband, Dwayne, with his pants around his ankles, and he was trying to pick up a pair of dice with his buttocks. God in heaven, she said, God have mercy. What? He said, it's part of the initiation ritual for the sons of Bernie. You have to be able to pick up dice with your cheeks. It's just, He said, you mean my father, my brother did this? Yes. Oh, my God. Something she did not want to know. Glenn Nelson was coming out of the Chatterbox Cafe. He told Darlene a whole bunch of Ole and Lena jokes, and he told her the one about Ole who lay dying, and he knew he was dying, and he said to Lena, he said, 52 years. She said, yes, 52 years of no communication and bad sex. He said, bad communication, I know, but bad sex, where did you learn the difference? Oh, these are old jokes. We love these jokes. Now he lay in bed. He was dying. He said, oh, Lena, you've been with me through all of this. You've been with me through my heart attacks and my stroke and the liver cancer and the drought and the lightning that burned down the barn and the time I wrecked the car. I'm starting to think that you're bad luck. He knew he was dying, and then he smelled lefse. It was Lena's beautiful lefse, and he got himself down the stairs and into the kitchen, and there it was. It was on the counter with sugar on it, his favorite. He reached up for a piece, and Lena whopped him one upside the head. She said, leave that alone. That's for the funeral. Come on. He told his Ole and Lena jokes, and he walked out the door, and there was snow coming down. Little flakes of snow fell on his face. Pastor Liz saw this when she went into her backyard, and next door she saw Mrs. Magendance with her two dogs, her Cocker Spaniels, and she had them on swings on the swing set, and she was swinging them. They were in specially made harnesses, and she was swinging them high, and at the very height of their swing, they howled this low howl. Mrs. McIntyre said, they're enjoying it. Pastor Liz thought the dogs looked terrified, but then she thought, maybe there's a place where terror meets joy. And why should we deny this to dogs? Father Wilmer felt the snow. He was out for a walk because he was stunned by this piece of mail that he'd gotten from Utah. He was adopted years ago in Chicago, and he's always been curious about that. And he saw an ad in a magazine for DNA testing. And so he spit into a little test tube, and he put it in the mail off to Logan, Utah, and they tested it, and they sent him back the results, and he read it over and over, looked at it there. He is not German, as he had imagined, because his adoptive parents were German. He's half Swedish, and he's half Jewish. Jewish. He was stunned. What a blessing. What a blessing. How amazing. How absolutely amazing. He thought of going and finding his parents. They'd be in their 80s now. Hello, Mr. Horowitz. I'm your son. You can call me father. How are you? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. How amazing to discover this now. It was all discovered on Friday night when snow fell. Mary Tollefson felt snow fall because she went out of her house because she couldn't stand her cousin Bernice anymore. Bernice had come back from Ecuador. Bernice and her husband Earl had been missionaries, Lutheran missionaries in Ecuador among the Hano people, and they were so happy down there, it aroused suspicions back in Chicago. They were so happy they could no longer preach about hell and damnation. And so a bishop went down there to investigate, and he found that the Hano people have this white powder called Hanawaha, and they more or less live on it, and they put it in the missionaries' coffee every morning, and the missionaries drank a lot of coffee. And so they were in a state of bliss. The bishop was suspicious. He brought a bag of it back to America, and he was stopped at the border by drug enforcement agents. And it was a complicated case in the courts, but finally he had to do 500 hours of community service. And they tried to call Earl and Bernice back, and they would not come back. And so they cut off their stipend, and they still stayed down there among the Hano people. The Hano people loved them. The Hano people are a deeply black, black, black people. And Bernice and Earl are white as can be. And they set them on thrones. They made them king and queen because they're stupid. They were in a stupor of bliss, and also they don't understand much of the English, of the language, other than just to say please and thank you, and I don't want any more of that. And so they had no idea what was going on around them. They were perfect royalty, perfect for rulers. There was a lot of family rivalry in this tribe, and there were rivalries with other nearby tribes, but somehow having rulers who were idiots solved these problems. To feel superior to your leader is one of the great privileges of life. And they would come and look at them and bow down before them. Well, Earl was perfectly happy with all of this, but Bernice was not. She missed the Midwest, and she missed hot dish, and she missed all of this and the weather and so forth, and it was too hot down there. So she persuaded the Earl to come up in September on furlough, and they came up as far as Minneapolis. And he just was so unhappy. He was chilled to the bone, even in September, and he couldn't. And then tragedy struck. He, down in the Hano tribe, he had had a servant who chewed his food for him, and there wasn't anybody available in Minneapolis to do this. And he ate a hot dog and he choked on it and he died. He died choking to death on a hot dog. And she had his body cremated and she took the ashes down to Ecuador. And, you know, there was a month of weeping and gnashing of teeth and rending of garments and so on. And then they recovered and they wanted Bernice to stay as a queen. But no, she didn't want to. So she came back up. Now, there's no retirement program for royalty in the Hano tribe. And so she had nothing, not a sou, not a dime to call her own, and she came up to stay with her cousin, Mary Tollefson, up there in Lake Wobegon. It only took 2 days for Mary Tollefson to figure out that this was simply not going to work because Bernice is used to people waiting on her hand and foot, and it just was not going to happen. So she got in touch with Lutheran Social Services and found out that they have a recovery program for clergy, retired clergy. And it's down in Missouri, and fishing is a big part of the recovery program. So she was going to send Bernice down there to Missouri, and she went outside, and it was snowing on Friday. Beautiful white flakes of snow coming down. She took Bernice over to Pastor Liz. Royalty likes to take communion in private, and so they went over to Pastor Liz's for communion on Friday evening, and there was Marilyn Tollerud, who was there talking about some agonizing problem, and she shut up as soon as they came in, and Glenn Nelson was there as well, and he had a joke he wanted to tell, and then Father Wilmer walked in. He looked at Pastor Liz. He said, "I've got to tell somebody." He said, "I'm half Jewish." She said, "Which half?" He said, "I've thought about this. I've thought about this all day. And it's the most wonderful blessing." And then she noticed the little black beanie on his head. "What's the blessing?" she said. He said, "To live with this contradiction, to long for the Messiah and to have the Messiah at the same time. And yet to keep longing for the Messiah, knowing that you have the Messiah, and still long for the Messiah. It's a contradiction, but life is full of contradictions. We'll never understand it. Life is not long enough full of contradictions, snow falling in the middle of May. It's a miracle. Rhubarb is blooming. It's the good life. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, all the children are above average.